You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Diamondbacks baseball.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one. Way back. And it is gone.
D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left. Hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks Radio Network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachikas racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly chat. Our technical director tonight is Luke Robbins with the television voice of the D-backs, Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron, and Bert, hard to believe it's been a mere 96 days since the sports world shut down. Feels like it was at least 10 times as long, doesn't it?
96 years, doesn't it? It's amazing when you watch a television show or anything pre-COVID, it immediately jumps out at you. Nobody's wearing a mask. They're all huddled together. Will we ever be like that again? I'm sure we will, but, boy, it's going to take a while.
You know, it's funny, and I know we were talking a little bit about MLB The Show last week, and I was talking to Chris Singleton from ESPN Radio yesterday at my other job.
And he's the best.
Singy, he is the best. And he was saying, you know, it's weird playing the video game and seeing giant crowds of people. Right? Like, that's where we are. I mean, it's weird also seeing sports in a video game, but that is true. It is weird seeing big groups of people.
I turned on ESPN over the weekend, and I'm watching a Formula One race, okay?
Formula
One? That's right. And it took me maybe 12 minutes to figure out it was just a simulation. Now, the simulation was really good, but all of a sudden there's a bro in his shorts and a T-shirt driving a pretend car. And I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't even real. Like, you're so far removed from seeing actual sports other than the KBO or 30 for 30 special that you almost forget what it looks like, and now we can't tell the difference.
Yeah, right. NASCAR had done that, right? They were doing the virtual races. But I had heard years ago that and this is maybe 10 years ago, maybe longer than that even, that the technology was good enough in those video games that NASCAR drivers were using it in preparation each week for races, that they were treating it like basically like a flight simulator, that kind of thing. And so, at least we have simulated real life. So
MLB The Show is as close as we get, which I would highly recommend because I've played it like 12 hours a day for 3.5 months now, and I'm kind of burned out.
Here's what's coming up on the program today. The D-backs director of player development, Josh Barfield, is going to join us. We're going to touch base with Josh on what are minor leaguers doing. You know, we haven't heard much about what's going to happen with the minor league season as of yet. There hasn't been a decision made, but normally guys are trying to get better to get to the big league. So how are they doing that now? We'll talk to the former big leaguer about that. Josh in his first year in charge of the D-backs farm department, and we'll talk about the unusual circumstances there. D-backs first round pick Bryce Jarvis out of Duke University is going to join us in just a little while. And in a moment, we'll talk to Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. He is their national baseball columnist. And Steve, the news yesterday was from Commissioner Rob Manfred on a program with six commissioners of sports leagues that are trying to come back, saying that despite last Wednesday him saying he was 100% certain that Major League Baseball would play this year, now he said he couldn't guarantee that. Some of that has to do with the financial negotiations that have gone on between the league and the Players Association, but also a need to finish health and safety protocol as well as rules. And now they're beginning to get concerned about the timeline of whether or not they will be able to put on a 2020 season. It was met with a resounding thud, I would say.
It was a complete flip-flop, certainly, from him, about 5 days previously saying that he would 100% guarantee a season. And I think that's what set everybody off. And today, following that release yesterday, everybody had a field day at Rob Manfred's expense. Ken Rosenthal wrote on The Athletic today some scathing, scathing indictment of him. Rosenthal wrote, if Manfred blows this, it will define him. That's a tough one. Tyler Kepner, who's going to join us in just a minute here, New York Times today. He is failing in his responsibility as a steward of the game. It's a shameful abdication of leadership. Now, Rob Manfred is in an impossible position, and I think, Mike, it may be easier to convince 1,200 players to be on the same page than it is to convince 30 owners to be on the same page, because one thing is for sure, every owner is dealing with different financial circumstances, and the Diamondbacks certainly have their own hurdles to. Let's remember, this is an organization that when Ken Kendrick took over, he was made managing general partner. He was staring $350 million worth of debt right in the face, and now we're upright and we're in good shape. And then if you got the Cubs, who have invested all that money around Wrigleyville, everybody's got a different circumstance. So given what the players want and everything that the owners have to balance, it's very hard and certainly problematic to assign 100% of the blame to one side or the other. And I think everybody has to get past that. And I thought Joel Sherman nailed it today in the New York Post. It can't be viewed as one side winning, especially in the framework of the other side losing. Mm-hmm. They have to find some middle ground.
Tyler Kepner, the national baseball columnist for the New York Times, is on the line with us, the Velvet Glove himself.
Nice.
Hello, Tyler. How are you?
How are you, my friend? Good to talk to you.
It is good to talk to you, too. And we were just discussing a little bit about your column today, which really didn't pull any punches. And I'm curious now, 24 hours or so after after Rob Manfred's statement on ESPN that he was concerned about that he could not guarantee that there would be a 2020 season, what some of the stuff that you've learned and what maybe your feeling is now?
Well, you know, it's certainly not, as you were alluding to there, it's certainly not an easy job for Rob Manfred. And I don't believe that he does not, that's a double negative, but I know that he wants a season. And so I've got to believe that, you know, there's going to be some further dialogue and that they're going to try to figure this out because, you know, it just seems, I mean, maybe the gentlest way to say it is that he's had a lot of ham-handed negotiating tactics that are just not working. That he's just, you know, he's trying on a different, different strategy every few days, and nothing seems to be working. Obviously, he's frustrated. Rob is not a guy who keeps his frustrations in. You know, he's known for sighing and all that sort of being outwardly exasperated. And I think he's pretty exasperated right now because he's trying all these different things and nothing's working. But the cumulative effect to me is that now you just don't trust him because I don't know what he's saying. I don't know what's really going on here.
Well, Tyler, how does he, in your opinion, walk that fine line between being a steward of the game, coming from a leadership position, being the deal maker that he has always been, while at the same time being very mindful that he works for the owners? That's got to be a tough position in which to find yourself.
It does, but what's that old cliche? I mean, that's why you make the big bucks, right? I mean, that's his job to build consensuses and to figure out how to smooth over the differences and to make deals. And to Rob's credit, he has a history of making deals. That's one of his big strengths. In the past he was dealing with Michael Wiener, who he had a good relationship with. Everybody did, but everybody misses him. That's a big factor here is that Rob has never really learned how to gain the mutual respect and trust, from the Players Association as run by Tony Clark. The last CBA certainly was accomplished without a work stoppage, but it was widely seen as a big win for the owners and, you know, these players are competitive and they don't want to lose, in their view. And so they're not in a mind of conceding anything. And when they don't trust the owners, that means they think the owners have a lot more money than they're saying, and they're not seeing the books, the complete books, so to speak. And so they just don't buy what the owners are saying right now, and it's a really toxic atmosphere.
Yeah, and I think with that books, and Ken Kendrick, who's the managing general partner of the Diamondbacks, has been on locally a couple of times You know, here on 98.7 FM, talking a little bit about that and feeling that some of that is a bit of a red herring because it involves it can make the case that there are a lot of investments that are outside of baseball or outside of the immediate purview of baseball related income. And Bert and I were actually talking about this, Tyler, before. Like, if you're to open up the CBA and see what baseball related income is listed as for the purposes of revenue sharing, it's far more vague than it is in the NBA, for example. And looking at those collective bargaining agreements differently, I think it probably helps to color the view of the Players Association in that they don't know if owners are hiding something or if they're telling the whole truth. And to me, some of that goes to the long level of distrust that there has been for the players for ownership going back to really since the union started to have some teeth when Marvin Miller was hired 50 years ago.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is, as you guys pointed out before I came on, I mean, it's every owner has a different situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had someone telling me the other day that, you know, since 2008, it is harder to get, you know, any loan you want, even though you're sitting on an asset that's extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as easy to get those loans as it was in the past. I mean, you know, and I don't certainly deal in big money like that, but I guess that's something that's also facing these owners, and, you know, and they have businesses to run, and it's probably not fair to say that, well, you're a billionaire, so just go into your own pocket to cover it and you'll make it up later. But you know, that's one thing that it is hard for most people, just about anybody, to relate financially to either side. Mm-hmm. You know, the owners or the players. But I think when you really step back and look at who to sympathize with more, if you want to do that, it is probably the players. I mean, they have a much shorter career. They're in the game usually for a much shorter amount of time than the owners. You know, they're always one injury away from catastrophe. And most of them do make less than $1 million and have short careers where they never even reach arbitration. Most of the members of the union are in that camp. You know, so they're out of the game and, you know, the money goes and they got to figure out a way. So I am a little more on the player side of things. I think they're being very strident, you know, and they certainly could have handled it differently. But I have a easier time understanding where they're coming from than the owners, because if you kill this season, everybody loses. The ramifications last a long, long time. And nobody wants to see that.
Well, with that in mind, I'm not sure. Did you get a chance to see the comments from Randy Levine, the president of the New York Yankees today? And remember, if you don't know your baseball history, he and Rob Manfred were actually the chief negotiators from 95 to 96 as they got the CBA done following the strike and subsequent lockout. And some of what he said was that the owners have been willing to move now onto the 100% prorated salary, and that the resolution that's yet to be finished has been on the other stuff, the health protocol and rules and et cetera, which it did seem like the union was willing to continue to negotiate even in, you know, some of the emails that were leaked over the weekend. And I'm just kind of curious what your take was on his statements and whether or not that gives hope that we're moving in the right direction here.
Yeah, Randy's always been extremely optimistic about bringing the season back, and I think Randy's always been sort of more like, it is possible. Don't, you know, he's resisted a lot of the doomsday scenarios, you know. So I get where he's coming from. There's another point I was going to make about that. That didn't really surprise me that Randy was saying. What was the other point that he made that you just brought up?
Just about that what was left to do was the health and safety protocol.
Oh, right.
Because they were willing to go to 100% prorated on whatever the number of games is. That's not something that needs to be decided at this point.
Yeah, and in talking to some ownership people yesterday, that was, you know, they were laying out for me sort of the procedural steps laid out in that mysterious March 26th agreement. I say mysterious because everybody has it, but nobody really knows exactly what it means. So what I was told was that this is a procedural trap that the union in the ownership's mind set up for them, because they're like, okay, tell us when and where, meaning like, give us a schedule, and as soon as you do, because we haven't yet agreed on the health protocol,
therefore
you will be in violation, and that's why we will sue you, and that's where we'll get you in the grievance, because you didn't follow the pattern. So Manfred and them are saying, like, look, what you're effectively asking us to do, this is, I don't know if this is accurate, but this is what I was told from multiple people, that, like, you're asking us to give us a schedule that's going to give us $1.3 billion in salaries. And then by doing that, because we haven't yet agreed on the health stuff, you will be in violation of this document. We'll get you for $1 billion later in court. And by the way, some of us might not even show up, and we're going to be pissy about it, and we're not going to, you know, help you out on anything. So, like, to the owners, they're feeling like it's a setup. And when you tell us that you're not going to negotiate anymore, then you're not going to deal with us on the health protocols, and you're going to trap us. So, you know, that is, I think, what the owners are dealing with from their standpoint. But I just think, like, you know, Manfred said a few days ago that they're very, very close on the health stuff anyway.
Right.
And I just think if these guys were coming at it from a position of seeing the possibilities of all the good that can come out of getting back on the field, rather than just trying to win a point here or there, a legal point, we could have solved this thing by now. I mean, I can't believe 3 months have gone by almost since the March 26th agreement, and they still don't know what the heck it means.
We just said it's 96 days. And yeah, and I think that that's, I mean, we just highlighted other vague language, right? Like, that's something that you hope that they address in future bargaining agreements is, I don't know, maybe they don't need to. Maybe it's just because I'm not a lawyer. I only had a dad who was one, so I can fake my way through legal terms. I'm the Lionel Hutz of broadcasters.
Yeah.
Tyler, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us. Tremendous insight as always. Appreciate it.
All right, fellas, anytime. Glad to hop on board.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tyler.
Tyler Kepner from the New York Times joining us. Bryce Jarvis, D-backs first round draft pick, joins us next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show, Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Well, last week, we previewed the Major League Baseball first-year player draft. D-backs had the 18th overall pick, and their first selection was right-hander Bryce Jarvis out of Duke University. And poor Bryce has now been in the drafted in the organization in less than a week, and now has had to do two interviews with me.
He might as well get used to
Friday.
It now.
Yeah,
Bryce,
yeah.
This is your future. This is what it sounds like.
Bryce, Mike Farron again, and Steve Berthume, the television voice of the Diamondbacks. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you guys?
I was hoping he would introduce you as former Katuit star, but that didn't happen.
yeah. I had some good time spent up in Katuit.
Yeah, boy, the Cape League is fantastic. I'm a Boston guy, Bryce, and the Cape League. If you've ever been to a Cape Cod League game, it is baseball perfection. It's beautiful.
Yeah, no doubt. The weather there during the summer it's hard to beat.
You know, Bryce, I got to talk to you a day after you'd been drafted, so I'm not sure that, I mean, you're still going through the emotions of everything. Now that you've had a week to process it, what's everything been like? Have you replayed any of what's happened over the course of the last week in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, every day I feel like it goes through my mind. At this point, it's just, you know, I'm anxious to get out and get to work, and you know, I think a lot of people are feeling that same feeling, but, you know, the quicker I can, you know, do something substantive, in terms of baseball, you know, the better. Working out is definitely fun and getting better is cool, but at some point you want to play games and you want to get off a mound. So, that's what I'm kind of looking forward to next.
Well, Bryce, I imagine that the way the season would normally end, you'd play baseball right up through now and then go into the next thing. But when the season got shut down early like it did this year, I imagine that you're doing the same thing now that you've been doing for the last several months. So is it, in that sense, almost less of an adjustment?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just kind of status quo right now. Like you said, there hasn't been baseball for a couple months now, and I've been in that kind of training phase for a while, and there's some continuity there. But taking, you know, the next step and being fortunate enough to be drafted and have those there's things to look forward to that come with entering a big league organization are definitely exciting. And like I said, I can't wait to get the ball rolling with that.
You know, Bryce, you've got some connections to the Diamondbacks organization through your dad. Kevin pitched for the Diamondbacks in 2006 and then was an area scout for 3 years for it. Do you have any memories? Do you have any old D-backs gear that you could bust out?
I've actually looked a little bit. We recently moved houses, so some things got, placed places that I don't really know in the move, but my best memory of my dad with the D-backs is, he came to Atlanta. We live in Nashville, Tennessee, and Atlanta's the closest big league team. And I remember he was playing for the D-backs, and we got to go down to Atlanta to see him play the Braves. And that's kind of my most vivid memory of my dad with the D-backs. But, it's definitely cool to have that connection.
And I know your dad is so much of has been made of this, Bryce, the way you really, really worked almost like in a laboratory, which I guess Driveline sort of is. But can you give, I know you've told the story a million times already, but can you give the folks that may not have heard sort of the background of your interesting route from your sophomore to your junior year at Duke and what you did to improve yourself as a pitcher and make yourself a first rounder?
For sure. So was a draft eligible sophomore, at Duke, and I had always, I grew up in baseball, and my dad played, and so had a really good foundation for baseball and pitching specifically, and had kind of been in the high 80s to low 90s, good off speeds, could get guys out, had a good foundation for pitching, like I said. But going through the draft as a sophomore, and I got picked in the 37th round by the Yankees, and that was kind of it was a cool experience, but it was definitely a wake up call. And I knew that I had more in me than that, and knew I could go higher. And it was just a matter of figuring out, what the plan was going to be to make those improvements. And so after sitting down, consulting with my dad and my advisor, and we kind of came up with a plan to split the last off season between Driveline in Seattle and Cressy Sports Performance in Massachusetts. And so went out to Driveline and did their motion capture analysis and pitch design sessions, and worked a lot on my slider and curveball, and making sure those were two distinct pitches. And then from there, kind of went to a strength facility and was working out 6 days a week, trying to eat as much as I can to put on weight. Ended up gaining about 25 pounds over that summer, and came back to Duke in the fall just a completely different animal, and had a curveball to add to the mix. And so 25 pounds, another pitch, and a couple miles an hour on my fastball and other pitches as well, kind of allowed me to have the short season that I did this year, and put my name on the map, and ultimately got me selected in the first round by the Diamondbacks.
That's such an interesting path, because I know you enjoyed the Cape League, and we were kind of joking about it, but you had an opportunity, I'm guessing, to go back there and do that again, but you chose a different route. Now, that's something that we hear a lot of major league pitchers do. Do you think that's trending younger now, maybe high school guys, college guys deciding, hey, this is where the real improvement can happen?
Yeah, I think, there's still a lot of really great value of going to play summer ball. And obviously the Cape is extremely prestigious. And, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to go there after my freshman year and get that experience, and definitely considered going back after my sophomore year. But ultimately decided that, going back was just going to be giving people another round of looks at ultimately what was kind of the same pitcher as I had been the last 2 years. And that if I really wanted to rebrand myself and show that, I was a different guy than the 37th rounder from the year before, that I was going to need to make some real improvements. And I think surrounding myself with the baseball minds that were both at Driveline and at Cressy was the way to do that.
Another moment with Bryce Jarvis, the D-backs first round draft pick. You know, we talked a little bit about your dad, and we talked before about him being a big leaguer and how that helped. But he also was a scout. And I'm curious what maybe he gave you from that aspect of his career that helped you understand what it is the talent evaluators are looking for.
Yeah, so I think he gave me some really great insight into that side of things. You know, I like to kind of compare the scouting process to speed dating almost, you know, in the fall. You have scouts from all different teams come in, and, you know, you really have 5 to 10 minutes to sit down with these guys and try to build a relationship that they can go on and get to know kind of the intangibles and, you know, your makeup and all that. And you want to make as good of an impression as possible. And a lot of the questions that teams ask are similar, maybe not phrased exactly the same, but ultimately they're trying to get to the same things. And knowing that my dad had been in those meetings and, you know, whether you like it or not, there's a lot of questions that do have right answers, even if people will tell you that there's not a right or wrong answer. There's definitely answers that scouts are looking to hear and kind of check off if you give them. And so getting to talk to them before and going through kind of those mock interviews and knowing what they're looking for is definitely nice to know going into those.
What's one example of a question that you heard a lot?
A lot of people, you know, ask where you see yourself in, you know, 4 to 5 years. And I think the go-to answer for a lot of people is, you know, well, I hope I'm playing baseball, you know, I'm pitching somewhere. And, you know, the ultimate answer that I think they're looking for is I'm going to be playing in the big leagues. And hearing the confidence and the, you know, belief in yourself that you can attain a goal like that is kind of the thing they're looking for there.
Bryce, we really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. We are hopeful that we will get a chance to see you in Phoenix at some point this summer. If not, I'm sure it will be spring training. And best of luck with the summer. Please stay safe.
Will do. You too, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Take care.
Thanks, Bryce.
Bryce Jarvis, D-backs first-round draft pick out of Duke University. We'll visit with D-backs Director of Player Development, Josh Barfield, next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Well, this winter, Josh Barfield was promoted to the Director of Player Development for the Diamondbacks when Mike Bell left to become the bench coach of the Minnesota Twins. And all Josh has had to do is deal with spring training that got shut down before it even got going for the minor leaguers and 3 months' worth of a pandemic. So not much has happened for him since he took over the job. But Josh is good enough to spend a little bit of time with us this evening. Josh, Mike Farron, and Steve Berthume, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
We appreciate it. And so, like, we're just kind of curious, like, what has your day consisted of? Because it's not like you've been able to have guys working out. It's not like you've been able to go and get manager's reports on minor leaguers. Like, what have you been doing? What are your days like right now?
You know what? It's been an endless, you know, just Zoom call after Zoom call after Zoom call. You know, we're all trying to stay connected as best we can. It's obviously unprecedented times, and we're trying to make the most of it. You know, so we've done a lot of continuing education with the staff. We reach out to the players, you know, a couple times a week to just check on them and see how they're doing, because we know it's tough on the staff, but it's really tough on the players because they train all off season and prepare. We got them all out there. And literally the first day of minor league spring training, Corona shut everything down. So it's definitely been an interesting ride so far.
Do you think that the minor league guys are in a tougher spot than the big league guys in a sense that they might not play at all this year? And I'm sure that they figured that out by now. That's certainly what everybody is writing and reading, although nothing has been official. We should point that out. But I imagine that's got to weigh very heavily on these young guys' minds who are trying to make their mark.
No doubt. I mean, these guys – when you're in the minor leagues, it's tough. It's a grind, you know, and the thing that keeps you going is the pot at the end of the rainbow. It's getting to the big leagues. And when you don't have that opportunity to go out there and get the reps and prove yourself, prove your worth, it's extremely difficult. Like I said, these guys, you know, it's not like this is what they do full time. So they go back home and you don't have the resources that you would normally have to work out and to stay in shape and to do all those things. So I really feel for these guys. And to their credit, they've been really creative. We get videos all the time and we're checking in on these guys all the time. And whether they're getting together with some guys in their area and finding like an empty field to go out and get live at bats off each other, or making makeshift gyms in their garage. I mean, these guys are finding whatever they can do to stay ready.
You know, Josh, in terms of players doing their best to improve, you know, we've seen, and actually we just talked to Bryce Jarvis a little bit about this. You know, last summer he didn't play, on the college national team or in the Cape, and went to go to, you know, different facilities to try and help him improve. There are more tools that are available for guys to try and do that. So how do you try and balance that or give them ideas on what they can do to refine their skills without getting the fine tuning that would come in gameplay?
Yeah, you know, we have so much information on these guys in today's game, and more than we ever have. And I think we understand it pretty well, and we do a really good job with the D-backs of delivering that information. So, you know, we sit these guys down when they show up in spring training, and, you know, in this case, we're having to do it over the phone, but specifically laying out areas that they can improve. You know, a lot of, you know, I actually talked to Bryce earlier this morning and just kind of telling him about what we do. And, you know, I know he's been to Driveline, he's been to Cressy, and we send our staff out to all these places to learn what these guys are doing and how they're helping their players improve. So we bring it back and we try and deliver those same resources to the players. And, you know, whether it's we've had coaches watching on Zoom in bullpens of different players, or sitting down going over their Rapsodo data or their TrackMan data that they're getting at these facilities, and they'll send it to us. And we'll talk about, you know, maybe how their pitches are moving, or maybe their launch angle, exit velocity, all these things that we'd be working on while they were here, we're able to try and do over the phone.
How about personality, Josh? Are you able to get to know these guys at all a little bit better?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one thing that I learned from Mike Bell, who is still a really good friend. I talk to him all the time, pick his brain all the time. He was so – I think one of his best qualities was he got to know the players so well, and they responded so well to that. I mean, he was so close with all these guys on and off the field. And, you know, that's something that I've tried to do and that we encourage the staff to do. And I think the better you know these players, because they're human beings. You know, we have all this information, but in the end, it doesn't do any good if you don't factor in the human factor. And I think we do a really good job of that. And while it's hard when you're not together every day like you would be during the season, we're constantly checking on each other on whether it's through text or social media or just picking up the phone and calling just to see how these guys are doing, because I know it weighs on them. And we have a great mental skills team now. It's just something that we didn't have when I was coming up. No team had when I was coming up. And it's such a great resource, because that's what, you know, Zach Brandon and his team, that's what they do. They're clinically trained to do, you know, and they teach us, you know, how to help some of these guys cope with some of the struggles, especially now what they're going through.
We're visiting with Josh Barfield, who's the director of player development for the Diamondbacks. I'm curious, you mentioned a lot of the technology and the extra things that guys can do to try and get better. What does Josh Barfield, the player, wish that he had from some of these new toys that you didn't when you played?
You know, they have so much. I mean, I love what we do on the, especially specifically being a position player offensively, how we can break each player down so you know really what you do well and what areas you struggle in. Before it was, you know, you kind of thought like, oh, I probably hit the pitch up really well. And then you go and look at the data and you're like, wow, I really don't. Like, maybe I would have been a lot better player if I would have just laid off that pitch up there or worked to get to that pitch better. And, I think when you understand yourself as a player better, it's a lot easier to make adjustments and work on the things that are going to make you a better player, which, you know, to our players' credit, that's what they do. And even the guys in the big league level, they're still constantly trying to evolve and learn themselves better.
You don't want to have a whole team of lab rats, I imagine, either, Josh. I mean, you don't want to be too data dependent, right? I mean, feel it still fits in there somewhere, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, every organization blends it differently. I think we really do a great job of keeping the human component, you know, and realizing in some cases it could be as simple as, hey, man, you just need to get back to see ball, hit ball. In some cases, you know, depending on the guy, depending on the situation, you can dive more into the numbers, the metrics, the technology. It's all case by case. And I know for me, I was a feel guy, but I think sometimes we always joke around and say feel isn't always real. And I think mm-hmm. The times when it was going bad, I think I would have had a better idea of why it was going bad a lot quicker.
Another moment with Josh Barfield. You know, Josh, I know obviously players that are working out are guys that are on the 40-man roster, but a couple of those are guys who are prospects, and some are prospects coming back from injury. And I'm just kind of curious if you've had a chance to visit with or get a look at Corbin Martin at all. And obviously, he was a key part of the Zach Greinke trade last year, was recovering from Tommy John surgery. And I know there was a hope that maybe at some point this summer he would be able to pitch in a big league game. If we have them, I mean, do you have any insight on how he has been doing in his recovery?
Yeah, I know he's on schedule with everything. And just I haven't been able to watch him lately because we've had such a skeleton crew up there trying to limit exposure up at Salt River and Chase. But seeing him as he was getting closer and closer to full strength, it's impressive, man. You can just tell some guys the way the ball comes out of their hand. You watch him play catch, and the ball just explodes out of his hand. It's a really special arm. And right away, just watching him from afar, I could see why there was such excitement about this young kid.
Josh, do you think that the situation in which you find yourself now, there's always got to be some nugget that you can mine and use to your advantage. Is there one thing that you've had to go through this process, do you think, that has helped you that you wouldn't have had if it was just a normal, regular season?
Yeah, I think the communication skills that I've had to learn really fast, transitioning into this role and going through this crisis, I think it's going to be really valuable down the road because there's so much uncertainty. There still is. And, you know, between the staff and the players, like, I know everybody feels the weight of that. And I think the information as I get it, being able to relay that to them to give them peace of mind and a little bit more, feel like they understand what's coming is, I think that's been huge. And I think that's going to be something that I continue to do as, you know, we get back to normal, we get back to playing baseball. I think it's just going to be constant communication with the staff and players. So everybody knows where they stand on, any given day.
Hey, Josh, before we let you go, I got a couple more players that I wanted to ask you about because it was really interesting watching the second half of last year at AA and seeing the years that Dalton Varsho and Pavin Smith ended up putting together, and they were the two top picks in 2016. And I'm curious what you saw for them, because those are guys that maybe they don't impact the roster necessarily in this truncated season, but likely would have to be part of the plans in 2021.
Boy, Pavin, the light just seemed to go on midseason, yeah. Didn't it?
Yeah, and you know what? I give that kid a lot of credit. He's an unbelievable kid. He came in, you know, with the high expectations of being a top pick, and didn't necessarily get off to the start that he probably wanted to in professional baseball. And it wasn't that bad. I think it's just the expectations you have when a guy's picked that high. And, you know, coming into the off season before last year, he really, really worked hard on not only his swing, but also his body and getting himself into better shape. And when he showed up into spring training, he looked different. He carried himself different. He had an unbelievable spring training, last year in 2019, and you could tell right there, it's like, okay, this is the guy that we drafted, and it's gonna, like, he figured something out. And he went out and he didn't get off to a great start in the Southern League, which is a really, really tough league. To me, it's one of the hardest transitions you have to make in the minor leagues. But once he settled in, once it warmed up a little bit, he absolutely went off, and he had a great year. And you could see the confidence in him. He came into big league spring training this year for the first time, and he knew he belonged, which was really cool to see. And then Dalton Varsho, I mean, the kid has been an absolute stud from day one. And it's not only the tools, it's such a unique package because he's this little guy, but he's really strong. He's a catcher, but he's crazy athletic. Probably one of the fastest guys we have in the minor leagues and our best base dealer and bunter by far. So it's just a really, really unique package. And the way he works, you know, I know his dad actually played for his dad in Philadelphia. And he comes from a great family. And he just has that work ethic where I'm going to be a big leaguer. I'm going to do whatever it takes to be the best player on the field. There's no cockiness to it. He's confident. He knows he can play, but he's always still trying to learn. And I mean, you should see him even now where he's on the cusp of the big leagues. He's still in, you know, we'll have Zoom chats at, you know, different positions and in the minor league side. And he's right there just trying to soak up anything he can to give him an edge. And he killed it last year. And I expect him to do no less when we start back up again, wherever he might be.
I think one of my favorite things about him was that basically, as you guys got to the playoffs last year in Double A, just sort of like, okay, well, here, let's try you in center field. And then he was pretty good at it, too, for what
in
I
the
heard.
Playoffs.
That's incredible. Like,
in
that's
the playoffs.
Ridiculous.
I'm telling you, the kid is an unbelievable athlete. He's just a little gamer. And for as little as he is, man, it's just such an explosive package. That ball comes off his bat. Other than Kevin Crone, it's probably the loudest in our whole system.
I've seen him bat leadoff as a catcher, bunt for base hits, and then hit home runs in the same game. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you just don't see too many guys that can do all the things that he can do, especially from the catcher position.
He's fun to watch.
Josh, we really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us for a little while this evening. Please stay safe, and hopefully we get a chance to see you at the ballpark or at Salt River in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Josh.
I appreciate it. Josh Barfield, the director of player development for the
I was hoping you'd mention my Blue Jays bobblehead.
Oh, I forgot. I was going to ask
come
him.
Up.
Yeah, I forgot. You could have mentioned that you had it there.
I showed it to you before he came
on. I know.
On.
Well, you should have known. You were holding it in your hand.
The great Blue Jays outfield trio of George Bell, Lloyd Mosby, and, of course, the Jesse Barfield.
Who was Josh's
they
dad.
Came out with a bobblehead a few years ago in Toronto, and I saw it on eBay. I'm like, I got to get that, and there it is.
Jesse's brother Jeremy was a prospect for a long time, too, with the A's as an outfielder and pitched a little bit in the minor leagues and had a great Twitter handle. He was Base Clogger. That was his.
Oh, yeah.
He had a great arm.
I remember that.
Like, maybe not quite as good as his dad's, but Jesse Barfield had one of the best outfield arms of
all time.
So we will put a wrap on this edition of the D-backs BP show next.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Wrapping our program this week, thanks again to our guests, Josh Barfield, Director of Player Development for the Diamondbacks, D-backs first-round draft pick Bryce Jarvis, and Tyler Kepner from the New York Times.
Cavalcade of Stars, as always, here on, what is this, Snake Talk?
It is not Snake Talk.
I think I'm pretty sure it is.
It is not. You know, just because Leo's not here doesn't mean you can try and...
Leo is with us in spirit, as always.
Spirits, I think is what you were thinking of. Spirits.
Hello.
Leo is with us in spirits. Couple things worth mentioning this week. John Duplantier did a roundtable discussion moderated by Harold Reynolds about being a black baseball player. There were a number of players that were involved in it. Sharon Robinson, the daughter of Jackie Robinson, was one of the moderators of this. Sterling Sharp with the Marlins, who was a Rule 5 pick. Josh Bell, the all-star first baseman from the Pirates as well. And Dupe. MLB just tweeted out, actually, Dupe's stuff from it just a couple minutes ago, I think. It showed up in my timeline. So definitely something worth checking out. And
My wife, Cindy, heard this and came back raving about it, saying it was that Dupe was amazing. And I have not heard it yet. I'm going to listen to it as soon as we're done here. But he is now her new favorite player based on his thing, which she said was tremendously insightful. So we'd encourage everybody to check that out.
I mean, he is, having spent some time with him, well, first of all, this guy could have gone to the Ivy League to play football. Like, he's a legitimately brilliant mind. And he is just an extremely intelligent and thoughtful guy. And so I'm not surprised. I am myself, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say because I have no doubts that it will be exceptional. So
you can find it on MLB's YouTube page, and it's also floating around the Twitter.
Yeah, so. In fact, I am going to retweet it now if you follow me on Twitter. If you're driving, just wait till you pull off to the side of the road to find it. But you don't want to be, you know.
Because usually you only tweet pictures of dogs and food, in my experience.
Yes, well, that's really all that matters, right?
Now, I was hoping, and Luke will back me up on this, that you would tweet a picture of Erica's haircut that she's given you, which is sensational.
No. It is very good.
Sensational. I've never seen anything. Your hair you looked for a while like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo in your COVID-19 hair. Finally became too much for you.
Yes.
Erica cut it, was it yesterday?
No, it was Friday.
Okay,
Friday.
So Friday.
I had to drive all over to find somebody that had clippers in stock.
I will say this. You did a little spin for me before the show on the Zoom thing here. I've never seen anything as white as the back of your head now.
Yeah.
It's whiter than snow.
It hasn't spent enough time in the sun. Fortunately, I've been in the pool enough that the belly, underbelly is not a...
Don't let us interrupt your highfalutin
lifestyle.
He
was in there for a little while before I had to come and work with you. So, shameless plug time, Bert. By the way, on Thursday at 6 o'clock, we will be doing a virtual engagement. And if you are a registered user of dbacks.com, you can get a link to join me, Amiel Sadai, D-backs Assistant General Manager, and Derek Ladnier, D-backs Scouting Director, as we look back at the five-round draft that the D-backs were a part of this past week. So that will be at 6 o'clock, and then Fox Sports Arizona at 6:30 will be showing Game 6 of the 2001 World Series.
So that was a good one.
That was a very good one. That was a blowout.
Yeah. Bring RJ back one more night. Bring in the big fella one more night.
I would assume that means next week they're doing Game 7 then, right?
Well, you have to wait and find out.
What if they went out of order with those? Wouldn't that be a...
Go in descending order. Start with Game 7 and go back to Game 1.
Work back.
Skip the three games in New York. You could do that, too.
Please don't.
Although those were awesome games.
Just the three games in New York. The outcomes, we certainly hope you enjoyed the broadcast, if not the outcome. I think that's the way to look at those. So, and I will refrain again from saying that this is a big week for Major League Baseball, because at this point, they're all big weeks.
We're getting down to big days.
What if we made the whole season out of big days?
Well, hopefully we can still get in 60, 70 games and call it good.
Hopefully we will have a chance to talk about a season or being closer to it when we are with you next Tuesday night.
If we do play, it's going to be wild, man. It's going to be fun.
I love the idea of the short season. It's going to be crazy. I agree with you. For our technical director, Luke Robbins, for Steve Berthiaume, I'm Mike Farron. Have a great night.